dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to the Frank Gaffney Show. This is your host, Frank Gaffney. I will be escorting you about the battle space of the war of ideas for 3 hours today. In hour one, we will be talking with Brigitte Gabriel about the threat posed to our country by those who adhere to what they call Sharia and what we can do about it. A fascinating conversation with a woman who runs ACT for America and is helping all of us understand what we can do to act to save our country from this scourge. In segment three, we'll be talking with Diana West, one of the most brilliant writers I've come across on a whole host of matters, but is particularly thoughtful and provocative about the question of whether we are wittingly or unwittingly submitting to Sharia. When, for example, General David Petraeus decries the burning of a Quran in ways that sound an awful lot like conforming to the dhimmi status that Sharia would condemn all of us unbelievers to. In segment four, we'll talk with Gordon Chang, a really interesting conversation with a man who's deeply knowledgeable about Asia, economic matters, and much, much more. Gordon will be discussing with me the implications of the meltdown in Washington over our budget and government shutdown and the like, and what China may do, and the options may be surprisingly few. So all of that is coming up straight ahead, but I wanted to share with you first some experiences that I had on Friday in a testimony that I'll be talking a little bit about with the chairman of the committee that allowed me to make a presentation before the state Senate in New York, specifically its Veterans, Homeland Security, and Military Affairs Committee. The chairman of that committee, Senator Greg Ball, will be our guest in a little bit, but we had a very interesting time of it in a very small, tightly packed room, chock-a-block with cameras. People clearly on both sides of the dais interested in what is the state of our homeland security, specifically with respect to New York City, which is, I think, universally understood to be a prime target for any future terrorist attack, and New York State more generally, and indeed as a kind of microcosm for the United States. What is the condition of our country more generally? I was given the opportunity to testify among a whole number of witnesses that Senator Ball called, including my friend and much admired colleague, Noni Darwish, one of the founders of Former Muslims United, an extraordinarily brave and articulate woman who has, through her writings, through her activism, through her public speaking and testimonies and so on, brought to light much of what we know about the dangers of our submitting to Sharia, the nature of it, indeed, and the ambitions of those who adhere to it to conquer us all. Well, Noni spoke before I did. Following her were two witnesses from sort of what I consider to be the usual suspects. People who were summoned by members of the committee who sought balance, as they are inclined to call it, in the treatment of these issues. Specifically, The committee took testimony after Noni Darwish from Linda Sarsour, who bills herself as the Advocacy and Civic Engagement Coordinator for the National Network for Arab-American Communities. She was accompanied by Cyrus McGoldrick, who is the Civil Rights Manager at the Council of American Islamic Relations in New York. And these two folks joined one of the members of the panel, Senator Adams, in castigating Noni Darwish, and for that matter me, in the case of these two witnesses, for having the temerity to talk about the threat that Sharia poses to the effect that only people in the Muslim community can have any knowledge of this set of issues, and only they should be entrusted with the responsibility to speak about it. And unless they approve, no one should contemplate dignifying, let alone listening to people who might bring a different perspective, indeed, who might strongly disagree with the agenda of the so-called Arab American Communities National Network or the Council on American Islamic Relations. In fact, when my turn came to speak to the committee, I spoke very directly to the dangers represented by organizations like CARE that have been directly related to the Muslim Brotherhood and to Hamas, organizations that are all too dominant in the Muslim American community and that have used their position of so-called leadership of that community, which is really, frankly, a complete fabrication. It's simply a function that the Saudis and others in the Gulf have been giving them substantial sums of money, which enables them to be more organized, to be more visible, for sure, than the vast numbers of Muslims who don't want any part of their agenda, which is, to be clear, bringing Sharia to the United States. Now, it is certainly the case that Cyrus McGoldrick assured the committee that they had no interest in doing that, as I believe did Linda Sarsour. But in point of fact, the organizational footprint of the Muslim Brotherhood in this country, of which, at the very least, the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, is a part, are all about this larger agenda of the Muslim Brotherhood, and for that matter, of Al-Qaeda and a whole host of other groups that are unabashedly violent and willing to use terror to try to impose this agenda on all of us. So we had this interesting moment where the committee was hearing, I think probably for the first time, about this doctrine that animates our enemies, which I argued you have to understand if you are going to make sense of why they are trying to blow us up or why they are trying to subvert our government. I pointed out that the research that was done by the Team B2 group in our, I think, splendid book, Sharia, the Threat to America, made abundantly clear that those like these witnesses from CARE and the Arab American communities who tried to dissemble about the nature of Sharia, that it could even be known by Westerners, but that it was anything other than just this gauzy religious practice, when in fact, folks, it is abundantly clear, it is eminently documented in our book, it is perfectly knowable that Sharia is, as I told the committee, a totalitarian, supremacist, political, military, legal program, that its adherents are intent on imposing on all of us. We must not let them do that. And I'm hopeful that this hearing by this committee in the State Senate of New York, like the hearing that Congressman Pete King, who, by the way, also testified at this hearing, conducted in Washington recently, will mark a turning point, an opportunity to open our eyes and address directly the true driving force behind the threat we face, and to help differentiate between Muslims who are seeking, pursuant to Sharia, to impose it on all of us, and those who seek to keep America Sharia-free. The latter are our friends, the former our foes. We'll be talking more about all of this with Brigitte Diana West very shortly. Stay tuned.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
China is a leader in the green movement? Yeah, Glenn Beck is as surprised as you.
Man has to do the things to take care of the environment. Americans are some of the best in the world on the environment. Really, China?
You're really looking at China to lead the world.
You know what our skies and our oceans will look like when China takes the lead? Which, by the way, check your watches, I think happened about last week.
Glenn Beck, weekday mornings 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by the absolutely fabulous Brigitte Gabrielle. She is the founder and president of Act for America, an organization I consider to be absolutely indispensable, which she formed after 9/11 with a view to trying to help inform our countrymen about the threat posed by what I think of as Sharia, and that has manifested itself both through violent forms and through stealthy forms. And there's just nobody who is with her team doing a better job of keeping on top of this and helping the rest of us understand it than Brigitte. She is also, I want to quickly say, the author of They Must Be Stopped: Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It. Brigitte, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. As always, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. The pleasure is mine.
Let's start with a term that is thrown around a lot, particularly in the Muslim world, with which you were intimately familiar from your days in your native Lebanon, namely blasphemy. And the effort to impose certain blasphemy laws under Sharia on all of us. Tell us what that's about and this organization of the Islamic Conference and its agenda with respect to it.
Well, because Islam is considered as the superior religion above all else, and also Muslims are considered the superior people above all others, therefore, because Islam is the best thing out there, no other religion or people can insult it, defame it, discuss it, debate it, question it, or question the Prophet himself, or insult any of the followers of Islam. And this is how Muslims view themselves. And this is why, as Islam grew and spread throughout Arabia, in the beginning, Christians and Jews became infidels. They became dhimmi, or second-class citizens. They were not allowed to build churches. They were not allowed to ring church bells. They had to pay the jizya or the protection tax to buy their protection as second-class citizens in Islam. And right now, as we see the rise of Islam again worldwide, starting in 1928 with the Muslim Brotherhood as a response to the ending of the Islamic Caliphate in 1924 and their resentment toward Christendom, which in their eyes defeated Islam. And now as the momentum is picking up, especially after Khomeini took power in 1979 with the Iranian Revolution, and now especially as the Muslim Brotherhood organizes with the oil wealth in Saudi Arabia funding all these terrorist organizations and group and spreading their authentic version of Islam, they are now going back to influencing the world and putting laws to how you should treat Islam. In other words, remember your place. We are better than you are. You can criticize your own religion. You can burn your own books. You can insult each other, discussing your own religions. However, you as infidels cannot criticize our religion, Islam, cannot write anything badly, even looking at our Quran or debating it, because we consider it supreme and you're not allowed to touch it. Literally not allowed to touch it. Actually, our soldiers are instructed overseas when they handle the Quran, especially in Gitmo, in giving it to the detainees, they have to be wearing gloves because infidels are considered filth. And a filthy person or a cursed person, the swines and the apes and the pigs, in the eyes of Islam, which is the Christians and the Jews, cannot even touch the Quran. And that's why our soldiers have to wear gloves in handling the Quran when they're handing it to the inmates.
Yeah. We're talking with Brigitte Gabrielle of Act for America. And I just, that's exactly where I wanted to go with you on this, Brigitte, is, as you say, this is kind of the leading edge. This blasphemy business, the imposition of certain requirements for submission on all others, long before they're actually conquered. And in that regard, I just wanted to get your take on the response of General David Petraeus, the commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan at the moment, to the murder of a number of U.N. workers, seven, I believe, in the aftermath of this Bible burning by a pastor by the name of Terry Jones down in Florida. And I just would like to get your sense of going beyond, you know, the kid glove treatment of the Holy Quran, as General Petraeus put it. Are you seeing in his response and more generally in the sort of rules that are being applied to our forces in Afghanistan, and I presume in Iraq as well, under this counterinsurgency manual of the generals, evidence of this kind of submissive behavior? And if so, how is the enemy likely to be taking that?
Well, we have been empowering our enemy way before now. I mean, look, our soldiers who, when we had our base in Saudi Arabia before we moved it to Bahrain, our soldiers could not even have their own Bibles to pray at our own bases. And here we were there to protect their behind. So we already set precedent to them that, okay, we acknowledge that you are superior than us. And when you are dealing with a religion like Islam, you give it an inch, they take the whole shebang. We are doing the same thing in Bahrain. We're doing the same thing in anywhere in the Islamic world. While in our eyes, we are respecting their values and their culture, they don't look at it that way. And I think with this whole burning of the Quran issue, and let me be very clear, I do not believe that we should burn any books. I believe we should learn from books. However, I believe that we in America, what made America great, America is the greatest nation in the world, most powerful nation, most prosperous nation on earth, because of our freedoms, because we have the freedom of expression, because we have the freedom of speech, because we have the freedom of religion. That's what made us great. And I think this could have been used as a teaching moment to the Islamic world, to tell the Muslim world, listen, we may not agree with what this pastor, Pastor Jones, did in Florida, but he has the right in our country, under our Constitution, to do so. And that's what makes America great. And that's why we are successful. When you compare it with the Middle East, those people in the Islamic world do not have the freedom to express themselves, do not have the freedom to scrutinize a book or a leader or a government. And this is exactly how they end up with corrupt government. And this is exactly where they end up with economic chaos and misery. And until they learn to look at other societies and what makes them successful and learn from that, they're going to be doomed to continue on the path that they are on. And also, this could be used by the Muslims in America, who supposedly are moderate, who supposedly are Americans, who supposedly respect our Constitution and our rights, to basically come together and make a statement to the Muslims in the Middle East saying, listen, this is our Constitution, even though we might not agree with this pastor, but he has the right to do so.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. We're talking with Brigitte Gabriel, who, in addition to the book I've already mentioned, They Must Be Stopped, Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It, is also the author of Because They Hate, and, of course, the founder of Act for America. You can also find her on her own television program now, I'm very pleased to say, with her colleague Guy Rogers. I've had the chance of being on it myself. It's a terrific show, and I commend it to all of you. Brigitte, we've only got 2 minutes left. Very quickly, let me set this up and let you run. We have seen in other ways the effort to sort of impose this Sharia program on us and to force us to submit to it. One that's particularly worrying to me is what's going on in some of our courts, including one down in Florida again in recent weeks, where a judge said Muslims had to have Sharia law used to adjudicate a difference rather than Florida secular law. Tell us, as you look at this sort of universe of efforts being made through both violent means and stealthy ones to compel us to acquiesce, to subordinate our constitution, our way of life, our freedoms, and so on to this this other very, very unconstitutional agenda. What do you tell people, in a minute, they can do to help keep this from going the wrong way?
I tell them, get involved. I created an organization called Act for America. We didn't name the organization Think About America or Hope for America or Wish for America, but Act for America. Because if people are listening to this broadcast without taking any action, they might as well be watching Dancing with the Stars because they are just getting entertained. I realized as I started speaking out after September 11th for years that while education is important, education is not sufficient. Education must be coupled with action. And that's why we launched Act for America nationwide. Act for America right now has 170,000 members and 530 chapters nationwide. And I urge our listeners to go to our website and sign up to get our emails and action alert. Sign up to join a chapter in your community so you can become a voice affecting your community and our nation.
Great
because
advice.
We want to be able to reach you when we are talking to a legislator in your community to present laws to stop Sharia from coming to your community. We want to be able to reach you so you can make that phone call.
And we have to stop you right now. Brigitte Gabriel, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your inspiration. Thanks for your leadership. And come back to us again soon.
Thank you.
Next up, we will be talking with Diana West about blasphemy laws and submission. Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents! Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Diana West. We are speaking to her from the Fair Radio Row, so there's a little bit of background noise, but we're in the midst of a very interesting program about immigration reform and securing our borders. Diana, we might touch on that with you in due course, but I wanted to start out with some really important work you've been doing in your blog postings and I think in your absolutely indispensable Washington Examiner columns on this whole issue of submission to Sharia in one form or another. And specifically, you've been writing with considerable, I think, poignancy about the efforts that the ISAF folks, the International Security Assistance Force, I believe it is, in Afghanistan, have the lengths to which they have been going, I guess is what I'm trying to get at, to appear accommodating at every turn to those who adhere to Sharia in their theater of operations. Tell us some of what you've discovered. And even before this Terry Jones business arose, what gave you pause?
Well, I started looking over at the ISAF website, which is our website for the combined forces in Afghanistan, because I was interested in seeing whether there was any official statement on the latest incident, which is what it's always called, an incident of murder by our Afghan allies of American troops. And I was looking at a pair who were gunned down last week and did not find a statement at the time. But I found the very first, the lead item on the website for combined allied troops in Afghanistan, particularly American, I found a guideline on how to handle a Quran respectfully. Literally, it was an ISAF-issued directive on how to be respectful of the Quran. And what struck me was that this was in complete keeping with literal Islamic law on handling the Quran, including prohibitions on we infidels from actually touching it directly or using it in any sort of disrespectful way. And it was an appalling example of how our own institutions are incorporating Sharia and actually promoting it.
Yeah. Really chilling.
It was really chilling.
Yeah. And Diana, what only has been compounded, of course, by the response of the commander of our forces in Afghanistan, General David Petraeus, in the wake of this episode in which a pastor down in Florida burned one of these Qurans. I wonder what your take was on General Petraeus's response about how to treat the, as he kept calling it, Holy Quran.
Yes. Well, the first question is, you want to ask him, what does he find holy inside the Quran? But the point of his statement was to prostrate himself before the Islamic world in complete concordance and harmony with Islamic directives against any violation of what is, to all Western eyes, a hunk of wood pulp with print on it. It is a copy of a book. It is not an animate object. It is not a person. It is a thing. And the pastor in Florida chose to use his freedom of conscience and expression to burn it in showing what he thinks of what is inside it. And what General Petraeus did was condemn this act, to offer condolences to those families and people killed in these Muslim rampages, which included a number of foreigners, and to have nothing at all to say to condemn it, no condemnation of the actual murderers, no mention of the human actors who actually did the violence. And so this was an absolutely remarkable statement because it was so in accord with the Islamic narrative that disrespecting the Quran is a rationale and directly leads to all manner of bad things.
Now, Diana, let me just ask you, because I think those of us who are concerned about the well-being of our troops and other personnel in Afghanistan or Iraq, for that matter, or elsewhere around the world, have a concern, obviously, that they not be made more likely targets for the violence of some of those who adhere to this Sharia program by doing things that, as I say, gratuitously make that more likely. Having said that, this seems to cross a line, I guess I should say, between having the right respected in this country to do and say and burn, for that matter, what you will, in the way of, you know, Qurans or other sacred books, and raises a real question as to whether we're not only engaging in a kind of submission to this program of Sharia, but we're actually transforming our country into a dhimmi enterprise. And I guess that's what I'd really like to get your sense of. Do you feel that we've actually now made sort of a maybe irreversible line crossing in that regard?
Well, maybe it's another irreversible line, because I would go back to 2006, 2005, when very
two or three American newspapers or publications would even print the cartoon of Muhammad that came out of Denmark that also, quote, caused all kinds of murders. I actually believe that the Quran burning has absolutely no fault connected to any violence or murders. The perpetrators of those violence and murders are those who are guilty of this. If this is not the case, then we have to go back to, say, the Pope's Regensburg address and say that the Pope, by criticizing Islam in his address, caused the death of the nun in Somalia at the hospital. She was murdered supposedly in retribution, or that Geert Wilders' film Fitna caused the dozens of certainly injuries, including many, many actual murders or deaths in rioting and millions of dollars lost in commerce to Netherlands and so on in the course of those sorts of reactions. So I think that it's very important to decouple a symbolic act, which could be a flag burning, which could be a cross in a bowl of urine, which, of course, is our famous example from NEA Grant cultural days. Any sort of symbolic act does not cause a murder. We had the fitna, we saw in the wake of fitna, we saw two Dutch troops in Afghanistan murdered. Now, I don't believe that we can say fitna or Geert Wilders is responsible for the murders of those Dutch troops, and I would say exactly the same is the case in the Pastor Jones case, burning a Quran in his demonstration, I would call it, in modern parlance, in a virtuoso act of performance art, is not a cause, not an actor, a causative agent in the deaths. It is those who take these Islamic laws as perpetrated now by General Petraeus and act on them.
And if, I guess the real point here, Diana West, if we allow ourselves to be cast in that way, we diminish our freedoms. We signal a submissiveness which can only inspire these guys to be even more aggressive towards us in the future. Let me ask you quickly, and we're almost out of time, Diana. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina responded to some of this thrashing around over the weekend, I guess, with a statement to the effect that we must be careful to exercise only responsible free speech, as he put it, in time of war. And I guess just quickly, if you could, in a minute or so, tell me what you make of that statement and what we should do with it.
What we should do with him. I hope his voters do what I would like to do with him, which is send him home. This is one of the most crazen responses that could possibly be imagined, because what he has done is he has bought right into this complete submission to Islamic prohibitions on criticism of Islam, because again, this is a symbolic criticism of Islam we are talking about. By Lindsey Graham's standard, it will not just be Quran burnings that he would see curtailed. It would be Team B reports that he would wish to be curtailed. It would be cartoons from Danish cartoonists curtailed. It would be all manner of criticism of any sort of discussion. It is absolutely an adoption of the self-censoring dimitude that Islam requires of its Muslim adherents and those over which it rules.
It wishes to rule. And Diana, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you for these insights. Tremendously important. We must not go there, folks. Next up, Gordon Chang on China and the U.S. budget drill. What's ahead?
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Meta System. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of 3 children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a 5th grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a 5-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager is skeptical that the changes in the Middle East will be good for the region.
There is little historic precedent for being optimistic about political developments in the Arab world.
That doesn't mean it will never be good.
It just means that based on history, there is not a lot of reason to be optimistic about anything that happens in the Arab world.
The Dennis Prager Show, weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined by Gordon Chang, our duty expert on Asia here at Secure Freedom Radio. It is always a treat to have you with us, Gordon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Frank.
I'm particularly keen to get your thoughts on something that is obviously related to Asia, but that's very much here at home at the moment, namely the thrashing that's going on about whether we should continue to fund the U.S. government for the next fiscal year, or whether we should just stop for a while and get everything sorted out. This is coming to a head at the end of the week, as you know. There are various compromises that are being floated, but one of the issues that sort of is in the background is, were the government to actually come to a screeching halt? Were there to be negative repercussions for the management of our debt, that all of that might prompt the Chinese to take an even more dim view of the advisability of holding so much of our debt? What's your take on how they're reacting to this kind of ferment inside the United States government, and where do you think it's going to go?
Well, there's no question that we should not be putting ourselves further and further into debt. But the Chinese view is not one of the reasons. And the reason is that the Chinese have no choice but to acquire our debt. They have an economy which is geared to selling things to us. And because of that, they get back dollars. And then they have no choice but to put those dollars into treasury obligations and other dollar-denominated debt. And the reason is that if they were to stop doing that, they wouldn't be able to sell things to us. There's no choice for them but to continue this. Now, as I said, we should not be going into debt. That's really the last thing we should be doing, but we don't have to worry about the Chinese. They are trapped.
Well, walk me through that, Gordon. I'm not an economist by training, and I know that you write brilliantly for Forbes.com, so you're speaking to an audience there especially that is very business-minded. But for the layman in the United States, especially if, as we talk about from time to time, Gordon, the Chinese are successful in making the U.S. dollar no longer the reserve currency of the world, why is it that they are trapped, as you say? Why is it that there's some inextricable connection between what is happening in our budget exercises and our debt exercises and their ability to sell to American consumers?
At this moment, in 2010, 147% of China's overall trade surplus related to sales to the United States. That's up from an already staggering 90.1% in 2008 and 115.7% in 2009. The Chinese are becoming more dependent on us. When they sell things to us, they get back dollars. With those dollars, there is really no other currency that they can convert those dollars into at the volumes that they need. So, yes, they can buy some euros and yen and pounds. They can buy some copper and whatever. But in reality, in order to keep this whole system going, they need to buy dollars. They have a rigged currency. They fix the value of it. That means that when those dollars come into China, they've got to acquire those dollars into their foreign reserves, which means that when they get it from an exporter, they've got to give the exporter renminbi, their own currency, in order to take back the dollars, because they sterilize these currency flows in order to keep the value of its currency at a pegged or at least a predetermined level. So essentially what's going on is that the Chinese are trapped into buying, keeping dollars. That's why they've accumulated all of those foreign currency reserves, almost all of which are in dollars. At this point, you know, the Chinese think about dumping our debt. They call it the nuclear option. They've been talking about it publicly since August 2007. They don't do it. They don't do it because they know it doesn't work. If they were to take our dollars and to dump them to hurt us, they'd have to convert them into other currencies, euros, pounds, yen. Those currencies would go soaring in value, which means that Brussels, London, and Tokyo would have to go out into the global markets to rebalance, to bring down the value of their currencies. The only way they can do that is for those countries to buy dollars, which means that the Chinese, if they dumped our debt to hurt us, they wouldn't. It would just be ended up being held by our friends rather than an adversary.
Yeah, so maybe we root for that, huh? Gordon Chang.
Well, you know, as I said, we should not be going into debt. It's really the
yes.
wrong thing.
Understood.
The only way that the renminbi can become the world's reserve currency is if we kill the dollar. The Chinese cannot make their currency the world reserve currency. We first have to kill our dollar, and that's why our destiny is in our hands.
Yeah. Well, all the more reason why we should not be printing large quantities of dollars ourselves with perhaps exactly that effect. We're speaking with Gordon Chang, who is, among other things, as I mentioned, a columnist for Forbes.com. You see him frequently on Fox News. You hear him weekly here at Secure Freedom Radio. He's also the author of The Coming Collapse of China. And Gordon, in that connection, I wanted to get your take on the arrest in recent hours of Ai Weiwei, a man who apparently is a very prominent architect, artist in China, and also one of its preeminent dissidents at the moment. What is going on, and what are the implications of this particular arrest for internal ferment inside China?
Well, since the middle of February, China has cracked down even harder on dissidents. They've been rounding them up. They've been disappeared, as we say, or they've been, quote-unquote, invited to tea, which means that the security services bring them in, give them informal chats. You have to put this into context in the sense that since Hu Jintao became the supreme ruler of China in 2002, really there has been a general crackdown. It's got tighter and tighter as we've seen the Olympics, the Asian Games. We've seen the Shanghai Expo. It gets tighter and tighter all the time. It's got even worse since February. That's because of the calls for the so-called Jasmine Revolution, those peaceful protests. The Chinese state right now is extremely insecure, and that's why it's jailing people left, right, and center.
And does this, to your way of thinking, betoken a catalyzing of the kind of problem that you've been anticipating for some time, further internal turmoil and possible unraveling?
Well, it certainly indicates that the Chinese leadership is worried about a failure of their political system, not just an unraveling. You know, essentially the problem for them is that almost all Chinese believe that a one-party system is not appropriate for China's modernizing society, and that's why it's starting to have to jail almost everybody. This is a process that's going to continue, and the United States needs to speak out about it, because if we talk about threats to freedom in the world, it's not only Gaddafi, it's not only Assad, it's certainly Hu Jintao.
Mm-hmm. Gordon, we've only got about a minute left. Let me just very quickly ask you, speaking of the U.S., speaking of security, the Director of National Intelligence, a man that I have frequently disagreed with, Jim Clapper, testified before the Senate about a month ago, I guess now, that he considered China to be a mortal threat to the United States. Does that suggest that the United States government is, in fact, adopting the line that you've just called for? And if so, what kind of reaction did he get from members of the Senate?
Members of the Senate just stared at him in disbelief. But he's absolutely correct. China publicly talks about waging war on the United States. That occurred last February when flag officers and senior colonels started to talk about this in public, and they weren't punished. This is the way the Chinese are starting to think about us. We're not starting to think about China as a threat in a systematic way. That means we're really in trouble.
And it's a posture that we can't long sustain without getting in a lot more of it, for sure. Gordon Chang, thank you very much for this short course on economics and the interrelationship of the Chinese and American economies and currencies, and also for your ongoing and very valuable assessment of what's happening in China and what it might mean for us strategically as well as militarily. We'll talk to you again next week, my friend. Thank you so much. In the next hour, we'll be getting an update on the shortfalls in our missile defenses from Ricky Ellison, the danger posed by Hezbollah and Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, according to Michael Braun, formerly of the Drug Enforcement Agency. And we'll be also visiting with Jim Carafano about the cuts coming in defense and what they might mean for you. Straight ahead.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.